Hi again, everybody. John Porteous of the Lovells Township Historical Society here, and you're listening to the Backcast Podcast. Hey, welcome back. It's our first episode of 2023. We missed you over the winter. Hopefully you missed us. This coincides, dropping this episode on the 20th, coincides with our last hot stove at the Township Hall tonight. Our guest speaker will be Steve Sendek, who's a retired fisheries biologist with the DNR. And Steve now is doing quite a bit of habitat restoration and river stewardship, if you will. But tonight's talk is going to be about his recent trip to fish for Dorado. So it'll be kind of a travelogue of sorts, and I think you'll enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it. And following that up, trout opener just around the corner, and we'll have another great guest for you for that. But want to let you know, if you're local, come to the Township Hall Saturday, trout season opener. Show up around 9:30 to register. We'll be doing the Leaky Wader 1K, world-renowned athletic event and fundraiser. It's $20 to enter, and there's prizes to the winners and all kinds of swag for registered runners, so walkers, whatever. So that's all good. And then we'll have lots of other activities. We'll have some artists, some vendors, some cold water conservation groups in the Township Hall. We'll have the schoolhouse, the Lone Pine Schoolhouse, which is the community's original one-room schoolhouse. We'll feature programs on local birds and local flowers, wildflowers. The ladies have done a great job, Nancy, putting things together. And then over on the Trout Museum side, we'll be celebrating women in fly fishing this year. So we've got a lot of really fun things planned. I encourage you to look out on the website. We'll be updating that. And so without any further ado, let's jump into our conversation. We've got an all-star cast for this, so enjoy. John Porteous here. I'm joined with Glenn Epperly and Richard Perry. And the three of us are in the company of two great guys. We have Dave Cozad and Tom Baird. And we're here to talk about really another great guy, Jim Schramm. And Jim passed last year. He's left a rather large footprint behind. And as such, we're going to be recognizing Jim as our unsung hero inductee this year. So you'll be able to come to the museum and read some stuff and see some pictures, but we're going to supplant that with a great conversation with a couple of guys that know him both from a big conservation standpoint. Well, they both do for that fact, but rather than me drone on, I'm going to say hi, Dave. Hi, Tom. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here.
Hi, John.
Yeah. I think just maybe as background, Tom, would it? Could you just kind of give us a brief sketch of just the breadth of it? I don't even know where to start. It's he's a man of many accomplishments.
For Jim?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim. Great loss. Jim was a good friend and a great friend of fly fishing and trout fishing and cold water resources. I met him in the 80s when I was still with Trout Unlimited, and he was helping Rusty Gates form the Anglers of the Aussable. And they shanghaied me over to Anglers, so I left my position with TU and joined the Anglers board. And from there, we formed the Michigan Hydro Relicensing Coalition, which was the Anglers and TU and MUCC and Federation of Fly Fishers, FFF at the time. In the meantime, Jim was also the Great Lakes Council of the Federation of Fly Fishers chairman. He also became the executive director of the Hydro Relicensing Coalition. And all along, he was just sort of an informal general counsel to all of us, whether it was incorporating our organizations or staying legal or providing ad hoc legal advice, researching the hydro laws, whatever it was, he was there. So whatever I've achieved was all really due to him. He was the guy that put me on the road and taught me the ways of conservation on cold water resources. Really miss him.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And that's you caught him in kind of like the second half of things after a 20-year military career with a tour in Korea, tour in Vietnam, retiring as a lieutenant colonel with a, I think, a Distinguished Service Cross. Not insignificant.
No, it was not only not insignificant, but it was really helpful because in a couple of instances, we had some interactions with the Michigan National Guard at Camp Grayling. and these were, you know, difficult situations which were resolved, but not only his legal advice, but his experience with the military, how it operates, how folks think, that sort of thing. That was just invaluable. I don't think we could have had the successes we did without Jim on board.
Yeah. Well, and to that end, as a function of his service, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he got his law degree towards the end of his service term.
He did. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to say he was in the Judge Advocate's General's office for a while. I'm not positive about that, though.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. When, David, you guys fished together, but you did a lot of conservation work together, too, didn't you?
Yes. I met Jim in the early 1980s, as Tom mentioned, at the Michigan Council of Trout Unlimited, because the Great Lakes Council of FFF was an affiliate member of Michigan TU at the time, and Jim and Tom and others came. Jim was very active in the Red Cedar Fly Fishers, which was the local club down in the Lansing area.
Oh, okay.
The local fly fishing
new name.
Club. Yeah. And I was doing a lot of work on the Pierre Marquette River. Bob Nicholson and Zemi Knopf recruited the Red Cedar Fly Fishers to come and help us on stream bank stabilization projects on weekends, as well as habitat in-stream habitat installation. And Jim came along with a lot of folks. Usually, 10, 12, 15 guys to put in a couple of days, hard work. And so I got to know him better at that time. And that occurred over a 3 or 4 year, 5 year period of time. They would return each year. And of course, Zemi Knopf was a part of that connection. Zemi was a longtime fly fishing guide and lodge owner on the Pierre Marquette. And Bob Nicholson was president of the Pierre Marquette Watershed Council at the time, and both of them were life members in the Federation of Fly Fishermen. So I got to know Jim pretty well, and lo and behold, he approached me together with Terry Lyons, who we all know, and Harry Barnes from the Red Cedar Group again, and said, "Why don't you come out to West Yellowstone for the National Conclave this year, give a presentation on trout stream habitat restoration work." I was floored, but I accepted.
That's awesome.
Went out there and we fished a bit around Montana in addition to attending the annual conclave. So,
well, you have to take advantage of opportunities as they present themselves.
You do. And so I got to know Jim, his brother Norton, and Terry and Harry Barnes, we all camped out in Jim's RV for that week. And that was, those moments were priceless.
I'm sure there's some special stories coming out of that. Yeah.
I'd like to know if either of you guys ever played golf with him. I always have a real admiration for somebody who can spend time fly fishing and also playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being a sailor and a fisherman. They don't seem to go together very much. But did you guys ever play golf with him?
I never did, but I knew he played a lot of golf.
Oh, I guess he loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of that as I was getting ready for this podcast, and one of the things that Jim taught me was humility. There's nothing more humbling than being not only a kind of a mediocre fly fisherman and bad fly tire, but also a duffer on the golf course. So
being able to shank a will.
So yeah, that was one of the many life lessons which Jim Schramm taught to me.
So you did play golf with him?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he was good.
Was he good?
Yeah. He was pretty good.
Oh, wonderful.
He had the right build for it, didn't he?
He did. He had all the moving parts in all the right places. He could hit it far and pretty straight. And you know, it became tough. Golf, fish, golf. His retirement turned into a real burden.
Yeah.
In terms of what to do this day. So anyway, he had a great time and a great life and a lot of fun.
Did you chase birds?
Not that I recall. Not with me anyway. I don't think he was much of a hunter. He was more of a fisherman. And in the end, he was just focused on the resource. He would get out from time to time to do one thing or the other thing. But he was really working hard, mostly behind the scenes, getting things done. Like that work on the Michigan Hydro Relicensing Coalition resulted not only in great settlements with Consumers Power on the Au Sable and the Manistee and the Muskegon Rivers, but a lot of other smaller settlements that people don't know about. All of them improved the quality of the rivers and the quality of the water on which those dams sat. And it also resulted in the removal of four dams on the Boardman River, mm-hmm. which had been there for a long time. They were coming due for relicensing. They also needed a lot of maintenance and repair, very expensive work. And Jim realized all of that and started advocating for dam removal on that river. Everybody got on board, of course, and now you know what we have. All of those dams other than the downstream Union Street Dam have been removed, and that's a free-flowing river again. It's beautiful, too.
It's quite a tribute to Jim.
It really is.
It's really nice.
If folks have an opportunity, to your point, going up to the upper waters of the Boardman now, it's really cool.
It's gorgeous.
It's always been pretty, but it's just, you know,
It's terrific. Well, all those dams are like they always are. They're in the high gradient areas. So when you pull them all out, it's a totally different river.
Mm-hmm.
There's some fast spots. There are some great kayaking waters. There's some terrific trout fishing. Not to mention the further upstream waters of the north and south branches. So, yeah, that really connected a lot of water on that system and should be good for the river here in the future.
That's a really nice stream. We have the Trout Unlimited Fly Fishing School at Ranch Rudolph on the Boardman, and it's special water. And Jim's name comes up occasionally during that school, and he's credited with improving it significantly, as he should be. It's a great story.
It's a great accomplishment. That was a big deal. That and the consumer settlements. Two very big deals.
Well, Tom, talk a little more about that and tell our listeners, because around the table, I think we're pretty intimate with this, but some of our listeners may not be. What does that entail, and you know, how do you even start down that path?
Financial benefit, isn't there from all of that?
Yeah, well, what it entails is this. Many years ago, hydropower was the thing in terms of a way to produce power in rural areas that had rivers. So many dams were built And back in the day, that was a good thing because it brought power to a lot of rural folks. But dams aren't too good for rivers or the fisheries they support. So years later, well, those dams originally were licensed under federal law. Hydro dams are licensed under the federal statute relating to it, and they come up for relicensing every once in a while. And they did come up for relicensing about, I don't know, 25 years ago, maybe more now. And the question was, how are we going to deal with that? And it presented some opportunities, among other things, that required the licensee, in this case, for example, consumers, to comply with state water laws and water pollution and water quality laws. So we went in a big way on that, and as a result, in the process of getting those licenses reissued, we were able to achieve a lot of new rules relating to the operation of the dams, including some run-of-the-river rules and also some enhancements environmentally, and also some money which was used for habitat improvement grants on those three systems, for habitat and recreation, basically. And all of that was coordinated on our side by Jim Schramm. I was the chairman of the coalition, but, you know, my job was basically to talk to people and call meetings. Jim was the brains of the operation, and he was the one that got it done. So there's all this relicensing going on, and likewise in the state there's a Dam Safety Act which needs to be followed. So when the hydro dams on the Boardman River started coming up for relicensing, the owners of those dams, and there were several depending on which dam, asked themselves, you know, is this worth it? Is financially, is it worth keeping these dams in repair and maintained for the minuscule amount of power we get out of them? And of course, the energy production has changed immensely since those dams first went in. Mm-hmm.
So, just the internals, the life cycling of the internal components, right?
It went from the greatest thing since sliced bread to kind of a millstone around everybody's neck and really insignificant compared to our other modes of producing power. So it was an opportunity. Jim spotted it and said, hey, you can either relicense these things and pay through the nose to maintain them from here into the future, or we can take them out. And ultimately, everybody got on board, and those dams were all removed, mostly in the right way, in an environmentally sound way. And now we have a brand new river. It's a gorgeous river.
Mm. One of the real fortunate things was a timing situation. Up until the late 80s, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission did not even contemplate retiring dams. They tried to find buyers if the current license holder, you know, didn't want those dams or couldn't afford them anymore. And so about the time that the Hydro Relicensing Coalition was getting going, the Regulatory Commission was looking at retirement as a reasonable option and how to do that. And they started out on the Elwha River out in the Pacific Northwest and moved other ways. And we have the benefit, because of Jim and others, of having been able to retire those Boardman dams over time. But before that, FERC didn't even entertain the notion of retirement. And I think the environmental push, the push by environmentalists, in addition to those folks who owned dams that were looking for a way out and couldn't find buyers, that merged, and the public benefited from that a great deal. And Jim's leadership, as Tom points out, in spotting that opportunity, those opportunities there, was a big deal.
Well, and that's, you know, to that end, I mean, that's nationwide right now. This, the big effort on the snake at the moment.
Yep.
But here locally, do we have any vision that way? Just we'll sidetrack for a second. Do we have any vision that way towards dams on the mainstream?
Towards Lake Huron, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, quite a bit going on, isn't there?
There's a lot going on right now. Consumers Power is assessing its dams on the three rivers, Muskegon, Manistee, and Aux-Sable, and whether it's worth repairing them and maintaining them, or whether it would be smarter to just remove them. And you have to remember now, and Jim was one of the first ones to point this out, the economics of these dams are not good. Not only are they bad environmentally for the rivers, but they don't produce very much power.
Hmm.
And they're expensive to operate. Many of them operate at a loss. So that loss all gets figured into the rate structure of Consumers Power. So somebody's got to make up for that loss. And in the end, it's the ratepayers, us. So for all of those reasons, Jim started planting the seeds years ago with consumers that, hey, one of your viable options is to start removing these dams. And if you look at it with a long-term perspective, you're going to see that it makes sense financially as well as environmentally. So that's under active consideration right now as we speak. Consumers Power has done a lot of community outreach, local meetings, and now they're assessing their situation. Dam relicensing will come up again. I think it's 15 years from now or so.
Okay.
And so they have to think about that and think ahead of it. And of course, energy production is a long game, so they're working on it right now.
That's great.
Guys, I would really like to hear your comments about how Jim got involved with Rusty Gates and in the formation of the Anglers. I think that's a wonderful story. Tom, Dave, both, you probably were both aware of what he was doing and how that all happened. Can you share that with us?
Well, I'll start out by letting you know that at the time, you know, Michigan Council of Trout Unlimited was sorry to see Tom and Jim and a couple others leave the organization to form Anglers. One of the issues at the center of things was how we approach catch and release and those regulations. But in the long run, we came to this conclusion fairly early on when Anglers was formed together. We accomplished much more today than we would have otherwise. So it's the old fable that there's way much, so much more work to accomplish than we can all do. How do we collectively figure out how to split that up and get it done?
More
and,
commonality than difference, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so while we were sorry to see them leave, we weren't sorry to see Anglers form necessarily. We didn't see that as an adversarial situation. We quickly recognized that together we were going to accomplish much more than we could otherwise.
That's neat.
Yeah, when we came to loggerheads on whether or not to support catch and release on the holy waters of the Aux-Sable, Trout Unlimited and its local affiliate opposed that. Rusty Gates and a lot of fly fishermen in his orbit supported that. And, you know, at that point in time, lines were drawn. And in essence, Rusty recognized the need for an organization. So he began the formation of Anglers of the Aux-Sable. Jim Schramm came in, among others, and taught him about organizing and affiliation with larger groups to gain strength, and then how to do everything from file articles of incorporation to start a membership system to start a bank account and have accounting and all the internal business that needs to happen, and also supported Anglers of the Aux-Sable in court. So that's how I got started. In the process, as I said before, Schramm grabbed me and introduced me to Rusty, and the rest was history. I went on that board and stayed for quite a while, and we not only achieved catch and release, but went on to a lot of other advocacy activities, many of which Jim was involved with.
Yeah. And Tom acted as president for how many years?
The Anglers?
Yeah.
Four, I think.
Four wonderful, happy, enjoyment-filled years.
Shocking how busy a small organization like that can be if it wants to be.
You're not kidding.
Well, that's another thing Jim taught us, actually. We're laughing, but he taught us about the connection between conservation and environmentalism. Over the years, there seems to have been developed this wall between the two, and there's the left-leaning greenies and the right-leaning hunters and fishermen, and never the twain shall meet, except when they do, and they often do on trout streams, because water quality and quantity and habitat, all of those are so extremely important to having a good trout fishery that that's one of the places where those two schools of thought often come together. And Jim was one of the ones that informed us about that and suggested that and introduced some people to us that we needed to know. So in the end, the Anglers of the Asable became a fairly environmentally attuned conservation organization with real good connections in the environmental community, which has helped us on more than one occasion, by the way.
Did Jim know and have a relationship with Glenn Shepherd at all from the Northwoods Call?
I've got to believe he did, but I don't know.
Don't know any background of that?
I don't.
I'll bet they had some discussions.
No, I'm sure.
You got to believe Shep was involved, yeah.
Shep would have been, I think.
Well, he was certainly involved in the Camp Grayling.
Oh, yes.
Case, the first one. And Shep and Rusty were very close.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to believe that Schramm was in on that.
Their paths must have crossed quite a bit. Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it's like, as Dave pointed out, you get a lot more things done when people collaborate. And effectively, efficiently, and...
Oh, yeah, all those TU Anglers fences have been mended. Look at everything we've got going now.
Well, exactly.
Hydro relicensing, the fish hatchery, dam removal.
All
kinds of things, yeah. All over the place.
Yeah.
Jim sounds to be the kind of guy that would have supported Reagan's comment. We were out at his library a number of years ago, and one of his quotes was, "It's amazing what men can accomplish when nobody cares who gets the credit."
That's right. That's a good way of putting it about Jim. More often than not, he was behind the scenes, not out looking for any publicity for himself, getting things done.
That's great. No wonder he's missed so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, you got a good fishing story to share with us?
You know, but surprisingly, I don't. We all sort of split up went our own ways when it was fishing time. Jim or whoever would drop us off and say, you know, we'll be back at this time. And so, you know, I don't have any real interesting stories about fishing at the conclave out in West Yellowstone. But what I can tell you is that I was amazed at how many people Jim knew from around the country.
Hmm.
The long conversations that he had with folks over meals and during sessions during the daytime during that conclave. As Tom mentioned earlier, Jim was active at the Great Lakes Council level of FFF, as well as locally and, as I learned, nationally. And one of the neat things that I'm aware of now in the last couple of years is Jim pulled people in to leadership roles. Dave Peterson from Pentwater is outgoing president of what we now call Fly Fishers International, FFI.
Okay.
So Jim was good at, again, spotting opportunities and matching people up with those opportunities and encouraging them. So I saw that in action at the Conclave back in the 1980s.
Do you think some of that approach transferred to Rusty? Because he had somewhat of a similar style.
Yeah, Rusty spotted people, and you're correct. I can't tell,
chicken
how that evolved necessarily,
yeah.
but no, you're right. And that's the trick to accomplishment is matching folks up with their skill sets to specific work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Jim was very good at that.
Just a lot of passionate, relentless people doing great things. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Well, I didn't know Jim hardly at all. I met him a couple times, and we worked with him on a few things, but I was listening to you guys talk and finding out how incredibly busy the guy actually was. he helped out with the Bamboo Bend project, and then he helped us again with Grey Rock. And I'm really surprised and awed that he had enough time to, help. I mean, those things are probably not much on his radar screen. And I think guys like that are going to be missed, and we need him now more than ever. But
damn good thing he retired.
Yeah,
so we could do this stuff.
Yeah. But they never have time to work. Yeah.
Could have been much fond of naps. That man was not off the accelerator pedal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
That's just rare folks. Guys, thank you. This is obviously a very special gentleman, and one that we're very excited to showcase this year as an unsung hero. So thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, John. It was fun to be here.
Thanks, John. Just in closing, I think it's very interesting and beneficial that we've got Dorothy, his wife, of 29 years, I think it is, or
yep. 29
help us,
argument-free
years, is going to help us out this year on our exhibit at the Historical Society, which is Women in Fly Fishing, and she's going to play a big role in helping us get that going, and we're looking forward to that support. So, Jim, we miss you. Rest in peace.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Tom and Dave are terrific gentlemen, and clearly now you have a little glimpse into the type of gentleman that Jim was and the contributions he's brought for us. So, thanks for listening. Stay tuned. We've got some great guests coming up. We're kind of all over the map. I will tease this for opener. Our guest is Joan Wolf. So stay tuned, have fun, be safe, and as we like to say at the end, mind your backcast.